fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And we have recognized that the fallen star is Satan, or Lucifer, who has the key to the bottomless pit. In other words, he is the one who puts himself at the head of the armies of the king of the south. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. And then out of the smoke locusts came upon the earth, and to them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. Now, as I've stated already, even as early as the 8th century, already people recognized in the Islamic armies that invaded Spain and other countries, they recognized in them already the locusts. However, Adventists typically interpret this as the Turks, not so much the Saracenian times, but more the Turkish times, beginning in the year 1299, when the Byzantine Empire was attacked by the Turks. And they were not given authority to kill. Wait a moment. Going back, verse 4. They were commanded not to harm the grass, the earth, or any green thing, or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God in their foreheads. Now, there was the judgment of the Turks and the Saracens, the Islams as such, were tempered by the fact that God still had mercy upon his people. And history shows us that even though they invaded the countries and the conquered, they were not killing Jews or Christians. They were killing those who were non-Jews and non-Christians, Gentiles. But they recognized a certain relation to the Jews and to the Gentiles, to the Jews and to the Christians, so they would just submit them. In other words, if they would be converted to Mohammedanism, or they could retain their faith, pay tribute, and acknowledge the Islamic ruler, then they were kept alive. The women, however, were often taken captives. Now the Quran ideally teaches that you should kill all men, and the women you shall take as slaves. But with Jews and Christians they were a little bit milder. So that is the situation as it was. The judgments were tempered. And you really find that often the Turks, they ruled with a milder hand than the papacy. For example, I heard many stories about Protestantism in Romania and in Hungary, in those places where the Turks were, and they judged very fairly between Protestantism and Catholicism, very fairly, and gave a lot of opportunities to Protestants to even bring forward their faith. They ruled more as worldly rulers, so to speak. But they were also very cruel at times. They were a real pest, you can say, to the middle-aged church, to the papacy. And you remember maybe that Emperor Charles was really very, very hard on them and fearing them. In fact, so much that he even tried to win the ally of the Protestant princes. And that led him to some toleration of the Protestants, this plague of the Turks. And Luther himself also, he was writing some things about the Turks that were not very nice. In other words, he was clearly recognizing in them the judgment of God. Their tails like scorpions and so forth. The whole picture of them shows that they were very warlike people. And this is what they were. They came on horses, infantry, and with this they were very fast. They had invented the gunpowder, so it was not invented in Europe really, it was invented with them. I mean, it was invented at about the same time in Europe when they tried to make gold. But the Saracens had it already. So they came with guns, their gunpowder, and shot. So they were a very powerful army and a great problem to the Christian nations. But let's read verse 11 and 12 now. And they had a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit. And who is this again? Satan. whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, that is destroyer or destruction. But in Greek he has the name Apollyon, destroyer. So what is Satan? He is the destroyer. For what purpose was he the king of the Islamic armies? For what purpose? To destroy whoever he could. And to destroy Christianity even, if he could. So that was the purpose. However, for the time being, because of this battle between the king of the north and the king of the south, Reformation could live, could breathe. And here Satan was working even against his own interests without realizing it. And this is often what sin does. The sinner, he wants to harm God's people, but by doing this, he often fights against his own interests. So, one vow is passed, behold, the second is coming, and so forth. So we understand a little bit more now about the Islam as the king of the south. Do we? Is this clear? And with this knowledge, let's turn now to Daniel chapter 11. By the way, that is the bottomless pit, the king of the south. Now, in Daniel 11, verse 14, we read this, and that's how we started our studies. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. Who shall he attack? Who shall the king of the south attack? The king of the north, exactly. That is the context. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. Now, we have long understood that this prophecy has been fulfilled in several ways. And I want to show you now one way. When the Iron Curtain fell, this prophecy applied in a special way, didn't it? But even before this, let's begin in the French Revolution. Can you see how during the French Revolution, the King of the South attacked the King of the North? Very clear. In other words, the armies of France, the Napoleonic armies, they fought especially against the political power of the papacy. In fact, it was a French general who took the Pope captive in 1798, ending literally the political power of the Pope. And for a time there was no Pope. But then he was released again from his prison, and then he was a Pope again, but he never had this power. That was the time when the European nations became republicans. They shook off the church power more and more, and the monarchies, and gave the power to the people. That was the time when America became a great independent republic, the safe haven for many who were persecuted in Europe by those who were still living under church powers. So this was the attack of the South, of the King of the South against the King of the North. But another attack of the King of the South is especially communism. As you know, communism is a special enemy of the church powers. How did Marx call the church and religion?
Opium.
Opium for the people. He despised it. He said it deceives the people. So we must get rid of it. And so ardently did communists believe in this theory that they tried to suppress everything that was of a church nature, Christian nature. So when we would travel, for example, and you know this from Romania, when we would travel to the places behind the Iron Curtain and we had religious books with us, poof, that was absolutely dangerous. When I traveled for the first time to Romania in 1978, we had with us a little bit of literature, not much, just a little bag, the Seven Angels in manuscript form. Then we had a Bible, of course, and we had a few other books from the Message. Small books. And you know how our heart bent when we went over the border. In Hungary it was okay on the way in. In Romania, through God's intervention, we came through. I won't go into details here, but it was interesting. Then when we came out, we left the literature in the country, in Romania, and we went out again. And when we came to the Hungarian border, the officer saw our Bible, and his face darkened. And he turned away and he said, "No Bible." And then he went away. You see, that was their attitude towards the Bible, towards Christianity,
and so forth.
It is opium for the people, you have to cut it off. Of course, they arranged themselves with some churches, and the churches arranged with them, so that there was a limited amount of possibilities of worship in the churches. They were not all burned down. But theoretically, that was the ideal of communism. They hoped to eventually uproot all Christianity. However, they were absolutely unsuccessful. The more they tried to root it out, the stronger it became in the end. So that was an attack of the king of the south. And the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, and with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. And he shall enter the countries and overwhelm them and pass through. Now this entering into these countries and overwhelming them and passing through, we saw fulfilled in the fall of the Iron Curtain. We had studied this here a few years ago. Can you remember? Very clearly. That was a fulfillment of this. But now, that was as far as communism is concerned, and communism is only one king of the south. That is atheism, basically. Now what is another king of the south? Islam. Exactly. And now listen to this language. And this language is so significant because it's used even in the headlines. And at the time of the end, that is today, we believe. Today, the king of the south, that is Islam, okay? And today the Islam shall attack America. And that's what we read, attack on America. Now that is fundamentalist Islam, which is attacking America. It was not just one organization as such, it's all the fundamentalist Islamic people who rejoiced in that attack and spiritually supported it. There's no question about it. Let the Arab nations weep as they want. That is not real. In their heart, they say, now we got the Satan, you know. That's what we really think. Fundamentalist Islam. I want to mention this. Not necessarily all Islamists. We must make a difference here. There are many who interpret the Quran different today, who interpret war not as physical war, but more as missionary effort, and who are more peaceful. We have to recognize this, okay? We cannot put them all in one box and say that is a Muslim, therefore he's a bad person. We can't do this. We have to recognize there are two different kinds. But at the same time, every fundamentalist Muslim would absolutely rejoice about what happened. And this rejoicing may be secret for fear of the consequences, but it is there. So, there was a definite attack of fundamentalist Islam against Christianity.
This rejoicing was not in... It was here in Adelaide. It was on the radio. The Muslims, they were openly rejoicing.
Yeah, they showed some pictures in Palestine about this thing. It was in Germany too. They were absolutely horrified, the security people, how there was a rejoicing going in these fundamentalist circles. Yes?
Through the grace of God, we still need to be looking at these people as that is
done. Exactly, exactly. Now, this is not our battle, you see, that's the point. It's not our battle, it's a battle between the king of the south and the king of the north. It's not even directed against us, as communism was not directed against us. We have to see that this is not our very enemy, the king of the south. We have another enemy. And as I said before, there is God's people among the Islams. You remember Joseph Wolf being in Afghanistan, and they asked him, why don't the Christians keep the Sabbath? Such a question Wolf had never heard before. And why should we not also have missionaries for these people one day? But today, if a Christian goes to Afghanistan and tries to speak with somebody about Christian religion and would give him a Bible, what would happen to him? That is the situation. However, the situation will change. Now let's read about it. He will attack him. And what will the king of the north do? By the way, why do we say America is the king of the north? Well, let's look at our principle here. What is the king of the north? What is his belief? God is Christ. Christ is God, I mean. Yeah? That is the basic, fundamental...
Not
believe of the king of the north, he may deny, and he will deny, the equality of Christ to men, but he never denies his equality to God. He clearly teaches that Christ is God. And that is the fundamental belief of the Christian nations today. In other words, that is the fundamental belief of Catholicism, of Protestantism, and so forth. On this it is built. Now, this fact that Christ is God, this very belief, is, as I said already, is standing in contrast to the beliefs of the King of the South, who denies this very fact. So, fundamentalist Islams today call Christians unbelievers. On what basis do they call them unbelievers? On the basis that Christ is God. That is the issue today between these two. And the question that we have is, in what way does America now represent the King of the North? Well, America believes to be a God-fearing nation, doesn't it? It's the God-fearing nation. The president believes in God. He has administrators who firmly believe in God. He chose these administrators. They pray together. They call upon the name of the Lord. They speak about God all the time when they rule, don't they? That's constantly there. America is the country of Christianity. And it is the leading nation. Therefore, it is enemy number one to the fundamentalist idea, fundamentalist Islamic idea. It's no wonder that they especially choose America to attack it. That is their enemy. You see, you have two areas, Islamic area and war area. And America, being the Christian defendant, so to speak, is war area. That's the reason why here, in this instance, he's the King of the North. And the King of the North, what shall he do? He shall come against him like a whirlwind. And this I find very interesting also, that the reaction of America and of all Christian nations, in fact, is very vehement at the moment. Very, very vehement. Like a whirlwind. They can't rest. They immediately react. They bring up every power at their command in order to fight against this, with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships. And this depicts all their power they put together. Ships literally, isn't it? Warships. And now he shall enter the countries and overwhelm them and pass through. In other words, he will be successful. In other words, as we saw a fall of the Iron Curtain a few years ago, about 10 years ago, a little bit over, more than 10 years. So likewise, we will now see a fall of Islam. You believe that?
Mm-hmm.
That is what the prophecy tells us. Therefore, we shall believe it. Like a whirlwind with many horsemen, many ships, and so forth. Exactly. Exactly. Now, let us turn back again to the great controversy and read how the first fall of the Islamic powers looked like, and this gives us an idea how the second fall looks like. Yes?
Any idea, or can we expect anything in the time frame in the King of the North?
No, forget about time frame here. No. That's not the point. We are talking of events,
yeah.
Not about time. Okay, let's turn again to page 335 in the Great Controversy. In the year 1840, another remarkable fulfillment of prophecy and so forth. And that's what he wrote. And now the fulfillment in the very time specified. And now listen to this. Turkey, or instead of Turkey, say Islam, okay? Islam, through her ambassadors, accepted the protection of the allied powers of Europe and thus placed herself under the control of Christian nations. I find this wording very interesting. You know, when the war in Iraq took place, what did the Arabian nations do? What did Arabia do? They accepted the protection of the NATO, of the allied powers of Christianity. Didn't they? They accepted this and thus placed themselves under the control of Christian nations. Now, Americans are in Arabia, and this is what angers the fundamentalist Islamists so much. That's why they are so hot and so angry, because Americans are on holy ground. They are in Mecca, and they are everywhere there. They have their armies there. They can't tolerate this. You know, we have Islamic area and we have war area. Now the Christians come here. That an Islamic nation should submit to a Christian nation. That is exactly what happened in 1840, which depicted the fall of the Islamic powers in 1840. And so it will be again. Let's read this again. When it became known, Islam will accept the protection of NATO and thus place herself under the control of Christian nations. When this is fulfilled, the King of the South will really be at an end. When it became known, multitudes were convinced of the correctness of the principle of prophetic interpretation, and so that's what we are expecting and looking forward to as a fulfillment in the events described here. Now, before we end this thought, I mean, that is a wonderful assurance that the biblical prophecy is actually fulfilling before our very eyes, in a literal sense, very literal sense. Now, let's see that this other must be fulfilled too, what we read in 41, and this is a very sobering thought for us as a people of God. He shall also enter the glorious land, and many shall be overthrown. What is the glorious land? God's people. So the king of the north shall also enter the glorious land, and many shall be overthrown. The word countries is supplied, so we leave it out. In other words, many shall be overthrown. Many of the glorious land will be overthrown. What does this mean? Now, this could mean two things, or three things, actually. First of all, it could mean that the king of the north will enter God's people with his philosophy, with his ideas, with his principles. In other words, when we begin to act like the king of the north, then the king of the north has entered the glorious land. When we begin to make policy, when we begin to depend on the powers of the state to reach our religious ends, when we have quarrels with each other and we turn to the state for help, this all is literally an acceptance of the protection of the King of the North. We place ourselves under the King of the North. When we do this, then we lose our strength, and that means that we are overthrown, literally. Another possibility how the King of the North shall enter the glorious land and many shall be overthrown is when he exerts a lot of pressure upon individuals. When he says, if you don't do this, you can't by yourself. If you don't do this, this will happen to you. I will put you in prison. If you don't do this, I will eventually execute you. Such pressure can be enormously great, and it is well possible that many will fall as a result of that pressure. And many will fall, it says. And a third possibility how this could be meant is that there will be martyrs. In fact, martyrs. In other words, the king of the north will then turn his attention, once he has gotten the victory over the king of the south, when he has complete control over that situation, he then will turn against God's people, and many will be overthrown. Could mean that some of us will be put into prison and actually even be executed. That's well possible. So that are the three possible meanings. But these shall escape from his hand. Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. And that's again encouraging that, well, what are these? Edom, Moab, and Ammon. Well, who was Edom? Exactly, the descendants from Esau. Moab, descendants of Ruth. The descendants of Ruth. And Ammon? Of Lot. Were Moab from Lot?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, that's possible.
The second daughter had, the first daughter had
Ruth was from the nation of
Moab.
I think Ruth.
Ruth was. Yeah, Ammon. Ammon is the descendant of Lot.
Yeah.
Ammon, the Ammonites.
No?
Yeah, the Ammonites are
too. One of the daughters there, the biggest
child. Ruth was a descendant not of Abraham, not of Lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
Lot. Lot is another line. Okay, we look it up later. Doesn't matter. The main point is this. Thank you very much. Anyway, the main point is they were all relatives of Israel, right? And being relatives of Israel, who are our spiritual relatives today? Adventists, Protestants. Okay, that's our root, our spiritual root from where we come from. Now, there are a prominent people among them. There are ministers, for example, they are the prominent people of Ammon, who are still honest in their heart and who will escape from the king of the north in this time. In other words, a rich harvest is here foretold from these people. I find it very interesting. Wilf wrote a statement to me just when I came here about ministers in other churches, how we should labor for them. I don't know how, to be honest, at the moment. But we have to acquire a lot of wisdom and a lot of skill to really labor for these people. And they will escape the king of the north when these things come. Then it says, he, that is the king of the north, shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. Again, this is especially atheism, as we know. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt. That shows how powerful the king of the north will become. Also the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. But, yes?
Genesis 19 verse.
Thank you. And what does it say?
It says,
thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. Good. Thank you. Then let's turn to verse 44. But news. So the question is now this: what will stop the king of the north?
What?
News, exactly. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him. So now he has seemingly complete control of everything. He has entered the glorious land. He has also stretched out his hand against all the countries. The land of Egypt did not escape him. Well, there were a few prominent people. There were a few of Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon who escaped him. Probably he didn't take notice too much of these people at that moment. But now comes something. News from the east and the north shall trouble him. What are the news from the east and the north? Well, who, from where will Christ come? He comes from the east. And who is Christ?
The king of the north.
He is the true king of the north. So the news from the east and the north is the message on Christ's soon coming. That will trouble him. And that, of course, will be given, as you say, in the power of the latter rain, that message. That is the news from the east and the north. It shall trouble him. Therefore, he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. That talks of a very fierce persecution that will take place as a result of the preaching of the message in those days, which is an answer to the power of the king of the north. He shall annihilate many. And he shall, what shall he do? He shall plant his tents and his palace. In other words, his power, now he will exert all his power between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. That is, between God and his people and between the people. He will try to prevent that this news, that this message goes to the people. Yet he shall come to his end and no one will help him. And that's the final good news. So let us really understand very clearly what these verses say and what is before us as we see prophecy fulfilled before our very eyes. Now, yes, you have a question? Yes, basically. It's when you read Revelation 18, you have a description of the tremendous power of Babylon in the last days. And when Babylon comes to an end, how so many people will wail and weep and so forth, and all the gold and the silver of Babylon will be destroyed in one day, and all these things.
I just wonder, because he is alone, and that is
exactly,
and that will call all nations. He stretches out the country and the land of Egypt. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, all will worship.
Then the news comes.
And that's parallel to Revelation chapter 13, where it says that all will worship the beast, all whose name is not written in the book of life. Yes.
Pretty three. Yeah, and he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver. We know that the scriptures says, why don't you buy from me, you know, these big precious treasures? And here he has power over these treasures, over the word of God.
No, that is a false interpretation. He doesn't have power over the word of God. The word of
no.
What you mean probably is he will try to lock the word of God before the people. In that sense.
Well, I saw it as in the way that he has this power over it, like he has power over the word of God to say, he's changed. It's like the false Christ is going to stand up and say, look, I have changed the word of God.
Yeah, but he has power over the precious things of Egypt. That's not a precious thing of Egypt.
And over all the
precious things of Egypt. Okay, Bill? We can't have too many discussions because of the tapes. Bill? Okay, good. Remember your questions, yeah? Good, let's turn now 12 verse 1. At that time, Michael stand up, shall stand up. At that time, Michael shall stand up. What time? That very time when he will put his palace and his tents between the seas and the people, and when he comes to an end. At that time, Michael shall stand up. Why does Michael stand up? For what purpose? The great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. Now that is a description of Jacob's trouble. And at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. It's a wonderful promise here in these last verses. And then God says, but you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Now that's exactly what we do. The term running to and fro signifies thinking, especially about prophecies. Many shall think about the word of prophecy, and knowledge shall increase. What knowledge? Knowledge about prophecy shall increase. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on this river bank and the other on that river bank. And one said to the man clothed in linen, was above the waters, how long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? And then come the description of the 1260 days and then the 1290 days and so forth. But you go your way till the end, for you shall rest and will arise to your inheritance at the end of days. So, in summary, this is the future before us. But verse 40 is that what is actually before our very eyes happening. The king of the south shall attack him, but he is like a whirlwind. What I found very interesting, very often in the news it was told, whirlwind. Now a whirlwind is going. Yes, Bill? You shall also enter the glorious land, and many shall be overthrown. Well, we always understood the glorious land to be interpreted rather spiritually as the king of the north and the king of the south. We were not thinking in terms of geography here.
Yes, that's right.
There'll be upheavals there as well.
Oh, certainly.
Because we're not looking at the king's geography.
I'm thinking also in terms of Adventism as such. He shall also enter the glorious land. That means he shall enter Adventism, and many shall be overthrown. What this exactly means, we will see when it happens. But this will be the next event. First, he will, like a whirlwind with chariot horsemen with many ships, he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. China is another country which still has to fully fall, isn't it? Of the communist side. And the Islam side, we will see many countries fall to the King of the North. They will acknowledge America as a protective power and the NATO as a protective power. Some have already, but some haven't. Yes?
In the North or South Korea has big cracks in it, you know, in coming down. In what way could it be interpreted? In the North Korea or Korea?
North Korea is communistic, South Korea is not. South Korea is allied with America.
So it's got big cracks in it as far as communism. In what way cracks and lean towards the enemy?
And in what way? Well, there's a great famine in North Korea. And like Russia, they have literally lost their economic power, and they get weaker and weaker and weaker, and as such they have no alternative but to throw themselves under the protective power of the West, the nations. They're not a serious threat anymore, really. It's more China, which is still a communistic threat, even though China itself is opening up more and more. So we'll see how this will be overcome, finally. But then there will only be one enemy left to the King of the North, and that's those who bring the tidings of the news in the East. Yes, Neil.
What Lord Andreas, through these arms here, he has been warning the States of communism is a very big hype of Christianity, and you cannot do anything with it. There was a shut-off of religion. And at the moment the Catholic religion can't get into Troy, because I've seen a Piper, Sister Blake, or more than one occasion, about some nuns or priests being birthed in China. So it's just saying, well, the experience wasn't in the most just a moment ago. How are they going to bring down the communism in China through the World Banking System? What?
Can you repeat this, please, to me? Because I didn't understand. Who understood this?
He's wondering
how
communism is going to fall.
Yeah.
Communism?
Yeah. Communism has fallen already. Oh, he means China.
Yeah.
China. I don't know. We will see exactly. Oh, well, they will use the banking powers against fundamentalist Islam and terrorists and so forth. That's for sure.
Numbers in power, which is money power.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so our time is over. And if you have more questions, you can ask them now. Yes, Will. Alex.
A very interesting thing is that the Greek Orthodox Serbians, that they, the Muslim Albanians, mm-hmm. they were like in small, like what happened now in big. Mm-hmm. The King of the North, but they were not approved by the true King of the North on this earth. Mm-hmm. Because in the former World War, Albanians were partners with the Nazis, with the Germans. And because they were their allies, they had to protect them for a while. Mm-hmm. And they are not fundamentalists in the eyes of the Islam. But it happened in more what we see now in Egypt.
Yes, Freddie.
Is it possible, Andreas, that you can enlighten us on the 290 days and the 335 days, if time allows some time during the last year?
Yeah, I can write you down the numbers if you like. We have two important events in history. The one is the year 508, and the one...
That is
538. Now help me a little bit. What was the conversion of Clovis from the Arian faith? Was this 508 or 538?
508.
Okay. And what happened in 538?
The Pope became the king.
Okay. That is the beginning of papacy, right? Mm-hmm. So when Clovis accepted the Arian, not the Arian, but the Catholic faith, was converted from the Arian to the Catholic faith, when he was baptized into the Catholic faith, that is when the papacy really got its physical strength, its physical power. And it exerted, or began to exert this power in the year 538. So these are the two events. Then another event is 1798, which you know is the end of the